This week, we're going to talk with the developers of That Dragon Cancer, and that's about it. Welcome to the 26th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And welcome to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. This week's episode started out as kind of being a normal episode with a special feature, but it quickly that special feature quickly turned into the entire episode.
And you guys are going to be much more better off for it.
So. Yeah, definitely trigger warning. It's going to be kind of a bummer, but it is about a really worthwhile project that is out there happening. Maybe you've read something about it. It's a game called That Dragon Cancer that is in development and kind of making the rounds at the various shows. So we'll be talking with Ryan and Josh. We'll do the proper introductions here. But they were kind enough to share a demo of the game with us, and then we kind of sat down and had a little rap session about it. So probably a little bit different in tone than we normally take.
Yeah.
It was pretty good, right, guys?
Yeah, we should give them kudos too, because not only did they give us the demo, but they waited for us to play it and finish it before talking about it.
Yeah.
Very stand-up guys.
Definitely. So yeah. So let's go ahead and listen to that right now. And it'll probably last for about like 45 minutes or so. And we'll come back with the general admin, you know, the usual stuff at the end. So 3, 2, 1, music.
All right. So we are here with Josh Larson and Ryan Green, who are two of the developers of That Dragon Cancer. Who surprised us tonight by letting us play a short segment of their game. So if we sound a little discombobulated and awestruck, I think is the right word.
Yeah.
That is why. I would love to kind of give you two the chance to introduce yourselves and just share a little bit about your involvement with the game, and we'll go from there.
Well, my name is Ryan Green, and I am a software developer, a game developer. My wife and I, Amy, have 4 sons, all under 8, Caleb, Isaac, Joel, and Elijah. And our 3rd son, Joel, has terminal brain cancer, and That Dragon Cancer is about him and our journey with him in fighting this disease.
My name is Josh Larson, and I'm a video game developer, and I've been working on this project with Ryan. We started it in November, and I do art, design, programming, just share most of the development work with Ryan, aside from writing and overall concept. So, happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on here, and also for sharing the game, that experience with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Dennis, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No, you're fine. Like I said, I'm just trying to pull myself back in from that demo. It was absolutely amazing. And, you know, I've followed the game for a while and done a lot of reading about it. But to actually experience that segment of it is incredibly powerful.
Sense of understanding of what everyone was talking about from the videos from E3. So.
It's one thing to read about it. Like before we got on, when we were doing our pregame, we were like, oh, we're not going to be maudlin. We're not going to be so-and-so overly serious, break from tone. But then that hit us and it's like, oh God, where are my tissues at?
Yeah.
So mission accomplished, good sirs. Yeah.
Well, so I mean, we just played a stunning piece of video game, right up there with Dear Esther and the likes. But I understand that this wasn't always necessarily a video game. And for someone who might not be as familiar with That Dragon Cancer, could you kind of walk us through the way that it has evolved over the time you've been working on it?
Yeah, totally. My wife Amy and I, Ryan, are kind of creative types. Actually, my wife does some stand-up comedy and some speaking, and I do programming and, you know, seeing and art and write and just pro and all that stuff. And so, like, we're always looking for the creative outlet that makes the most sense for what we're trying to communicate. And I think over the last 3 years, it's kind of, we've kind of found many different ways to kind of express that. So my wife started a blog about Joel, and that went from just updating our friends and family about what we were going through and kind of the ups and downs and of the news updates from the hospital. We also started talking about things like theology and art and poetry and things like that. And so fast forward to a couple years ago when we were told that Joel was terminal, we started having to talk to our kids more seriously about more eternal things, you know. When they're under five, they don't really understand much, and so we had to start talking about things like heaven. And I remember my wife told the boys a story. She kind of framed it as Joel was fighting this big dragon cancer, you know, and that God fought with him. And that he was very brave. And I remember Amy telling me that Isaac, our second son, said, "Well, Mom, like, Joel's going to lose." And she was kind of taken aback. And she was like, "What?" He's like, "Well, he's just a, something to the effect of, well, he's just a baby. He can't beat a dragon." And so that kind of frames the context of that dragon cancer, is that cancer is this thing that in society we haven't figured out how to fix, you know? It's something like that's innately broken in us. It's our DNA perverted, you know, and it works against us. And so this cancer is something that we can't, we haven't been able to kill. All we can do is try to choke it out, or poison it, or burn it, or suffocate it, or, you know, fill in the blank. And so it kind of, to me, frames the human condition in a broader sense, but also specifically that it's a dragon that, you know, baby Joel was fighting. And so what I wanted to address in this game is those themes. And so we thought about maybe like a side-scrolling platformer where, you know, a little knight goes and fights that dragon. And kind of limited by his own disabilities that were caused by the treatment, you know, or it kind of turned into then into like an art installation that kind of explored those themes in a more like arty way, you know, and we'd have, you know, people in the gallery kind of interacting with the paintings in kind of an interactive setting. And then, you know, one day I was actually at church and I just had this thought of a much more game type environment. And originally I had thought there would be this reality that's the hospital, and there would be this fantasy that's like this parallel allegorical universe. And so I was all very excited about all the different things that we were going to explore there. And as I made the demo, as I wrote it out, we kind of all of a sudden stumbled across the heart of it, which is the demo that you just played, and realizing that's, you know, through talking to people, that that's really the core of the experience. And so we kind of branch out from there and have narrowed it down to dragon cancer will take place in a children's hospital, and you'll kind of relive, kind of untethered from time. So that dragon cancer will take place in a children's hospital, kind of untethered from time. Yeah. And so you'll experience like what we went through in kind of a poetic form, as well as, you know, our community of faith, or whether it's in our bedroom at night when Joel's having a seizure, or whether it's Joel's learning to dance and to walk again, or whether Joel's just laughing because he has an incredible laugh. So, you talked about the model, you know, you don't want to be modeling, and we don't either. You know, this is just one aspect. It's one actually very small aspect of our whole experience has been this level of intense despair. Most of it has been characterized by hope and joy and all that comes with, you know, raising young children. So that's kind of the context of our journey so far. And it's also something that we're still writing. I have a framework for where I want to go. There's things that happen every day that change, you know, it's like, oh, that would make a really interesting moment. And so what I think is going to happen is we're going to have this set of moments translated into poetry or music or narrative or even like maybe puzzles, because you'll have Joel and Elijah kind of getting into trouble together. So we're gonna go on that roller coaster, because it really is a roller coaster. It can change by the hour with us. So that's where we're going.
So I have a question: is the ending of the game written yet, or is it still in development?
I don't know how the game's going to end.
Okay. And I guess I had another question too. From playing the demo, it's hard to kind of quantify how I reacted. The only thing I can say about how I reacted to it is there's a lump in the back of my throat right now, with kind of just being exposed to a perspective that I haven't been exposed to before. So I guess the question I have is, what do you want people to get from the experience of playing this game?
I think one thing that Ryan said that I really like that sticks with me is the part of the film from Rise of the Guardians that you really like, talking about how staring death in the face and declaring that you're not afraid of it.
Yeah.
But what was that? Can you like
expand? Yeah. Okay, so Rise of the Guardians is this animated film that you would not expect to be deep at all, right? So Jack Frost and the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy and Santa Claus and the guy that makes you sleep.
The Sandman?
Sandman. and then the Boogeyman, okay? And so... of course, all the heroes, all the guardians of the children, their currency is belief and good dreams, right? And the currency of the boogeyman is fear. And so that's manifest in like this really, scary and honestly kind of creepy, like swarm of gnats that kind of invade the children's dreams. Anyway, at one point, Jack Frost says he looks at fear and he says, or the boogeyman, and he says, "I believe in you, but I don't fear you." And I think that that's something that I want to instill in this game, that I want people to be able to look at death and say, "I believe you're there and you're gonna eventually arrive, but I don't fear you." And for us, it's going to arrive for all of us, man. We could get hit by a bus tomorrow.
Right.
So for Amy and I and our experience with our children and with Joel, we just realize we don't know how much time we have. Right. And so we should choose to love and encourage each other and to get past that fear of death.
And I think the demo that we've created, it's kind of like, if you think about, watching an adventure movie, you've got the hero and he's trying to get to some destination, falls into a pit and it's all muddy and he's like trying to climb out and he tries to do every single thing that he can. And it's like the point in the movie where he just keeps slipping and he can't quite get out. But then at the very last second, there's some other character that reaches down with his hand and like grabs him.
Right.
And so the demo that we have is kind of like, It ends right as the other hand reaches down.
Right.
And so our intention is to like to add before and after that, so to speak. So
we might shove you into a pit, but we're not gonna leave you there.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Obviously what you shared in that snippet of the game is intensely personal. I was very, very struck by some of the commentary at the beginning talking about, at first I thought it was the hero of this story, right? Mm-hmm. And I just felt throughout that entire thing, watching you lose your innocence and kind of feeling I was losing my innocence in that respect along with you.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious, That's a very vulnerable place to share. Have you felt tempted to hold parts of that experience back? And then also, still on the personal side, you know, have you shared this with obviously your wife, but any of your kids? Do they? It's kind of a vulnerable position to see dad in, right?
Sure.
And so what's been their interaction with it, and has that helped? Is that something you're still thinking through? What has been sharing that like?
Yeah, it's tough for me because we wrote a book called He's Not Dead Yet. Mm-hmm. And we wrote it in prose and we had pictures, and it was kind of like we're thinking, okay, this is kind of for kids because it was told from the perspective of an older brother. And so it has a child's voice. And I was kind of reticent to let Caleb, my oldest, read it. And then I had him read it to me one night, and it was just like the heaviness of what I was saying kind of struck me for the first time. And I think my children understand death because it's been overshadowing us their whole life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that our children kind of handle it in stride, you know? But it kind of puts a fear of God in me to talk about it and to have children read it. And so for me, like that was pretty raw and pretty brutal. And so now Dragon Cancer is even more raw and can be more. And so I'm like hesitant to really say it's a child's game. I think it's for parents. I think where remission, where you shoot cancer cells and you fight off the disease, that's for children. And this is kind of for the parents of those children. So I'm avoiding letting Caleb play it, even though he really wants to and he really loves video games, because I'm not sure I want to take him there yet, you know, because he's seven. And he's living it. So, mm-hmm. I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure yet. I think as far as vulnerability goes, I'm kind of an open book type of person. I think that we overcome by our testimony, like our story being told, and that's the good and the bad. You don't really have anything to gain by posing, but I think you have mm-hmm. a lot to gain by being honest with people about where you've been and where you're at now. So, I don't think I'll censor that. I'm not gonna lay on display all of my weakness and all of my thoughts, but certainly yep. I'd err on the side of just being honest with people, because I find that when you're honest with people, they're honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to. I had a question about. Did you have any inspirations from other video games in making this? Because this game, the format of it seems to be pretty unique, and I, off the top of my head, I can't think of another game that's like it. Were there any inspirations from other video games as far as the animation or the format goes? Or are you just blazing this trail by yourself?
I'm pretty new to video games, and so I don't have that big of a literacy. I like films are that's my primary source of entertainment is film, and so I'd like to think I'm inspired by things like Terrence Malick, who kind of he like takes film to like the nth degree, right? But yeah. At the same time, I want to be like a more accessible Terrence Malick.
Yeah.
To have a little bit more narrative and have a little bit more concrete imagery, and especially since I'm doing poetry and voiceover. So that's kind of the inspiration for that. And then what I'm finding is that as I play more games, like Dear Esther, I find that there's a real kinship there. So I think we're in the family, which is exciting to me because I want it to be familiar, not so avant-garde that nobody gets it. You know, I want to connect with people.
Just out of curiosity, have you ever seen the movie The Fountain?
Yes. Yeah, once. Okay. And I own it. I kind of refuse to go back to it.
Okay.
Kind of one thing that is interesting to me is I'm asking people to go there, but I don't expect people to go there more than once.
Okay.
And so it's like one of those things where it's kind of a cup of water. You take a drink. That was a great drink. Or, you know, you give them a meal. That was a great meal, but I don't really want any more.
I hope you're not saying we can't play the finished version. I would be very disappointed.
No, I just don't intend for it to be, you know, something you grind on. You know, I think you have the meal and then you move on and you reflect on it. Just like, for me, a good movie, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
a good movie doesn't have to be seen over and over again, although some of them I really do watch. But The Fountain is one that I kind of avoid for obvious content reasons.
Yes. Yeah.
But I loved it. It also informs my design. I would say the most influential things would probably be Tree of Life and
Tree of Life.
Josh and I pretty much geek out over Tree of Life.
Yeah.
The second you said Terrence Malick, it was like, yep, Tree of Life.
I remember I took Elijah to that movie not knowing there wasn't a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like 2 months old. Fully, we're in the back of the theater, and he was quiet most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a long movie. So.
Yeah. But then at the end of the movie, somebody says, well, that was one big LSD trip too late in life, or something like
that. Oh, man.
Go ahead.
There is one thing. I mean, maybe we couldn't pin it down to a specific game that influenced, but certainly prototyping in Twine had a huge influence on the game. I mean, you could kind of see the game. We didn't have this intention up front, but you could kind of see it as like some kind of weird combination between like an immersive 3D exploration game and interactive fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's definitely one thing that's influenced us. And then Geo A Day and certain like low poly fancy rendering art styles is definitely another source of inspiration.
Have you checked out Kentucky Route Zero?
Yeah. Oh man, it's so awesome.
Yeah, it's really good.
I haven't played Act Two yet, but yeah. I played Act One and was totally amazed by it.
No, I mean, I just prior to hopping on here in preparation, you know, kind of for the show, I figured, hey, we're talking about some pretty heavy stuff. So I went back and played and then replayed Depression Quest. So Twine was kind of at the top of my mind while I was looking at this stuff. So did you actually prototype this in Twine?
I did. I could probably send you the link. it was interesting to me that like it was amazing because once we wrote it, like it kind of stood on its own. Like. Mm-hmm. You could almost release it in Twine because the text was good enough. And that's where I kind of want to get, like, aside from the visual thing, all the pretty things we want to do and all the immersive, you know, voice acting and natural sound and all that. Like, I feel like the text needs to stand on its own.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving forward, that's how we're going to prototype all of our scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So
you'll probably be able to, you know, download lo-fi version and then like the high-res version.
Yeah.
What was the game we were talking about, Ben, not being able to run earlier?
Any game, practically.
no, we were talking, again, like the third reference, Dear Esther, I was like, hey, let's run. Just because we're in a mood, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm so excited because being a snobby Mac user, I to see Dear Esther on the Home of One,
definitely.
It was really interesting to hear you talk about, you know, Ryan, you said your background isn't really with video games. You're obviously an incredibly creative person, but you know, that's not necessarily your background. And then you talk about, you know, doing something once and then moving on. It kind of makes me curious. Do you guys see yourselves working on more video game projects together in the future? Or is this kind of, you're solely focused on this one project right now?
I find that as I'm working on this stuff, I'm realizing, oh, this is kind of what I was made to do, I think, because I wanted to be a filmmaker for certain reasons. But what I'm finding is like games and film are so closely related with the aspect that then you can have a conversation with the viewer as the creator. And so I think about that a lot and how I think that the interactive medium more closely mimics how I see the world. And how the world works, as far as like there being a creator and the creator creating a world and putting us in it and wanting us to love him and love each other. And so I kind of want to model that in games. And I think doing a game like this with such a serious, realistic subject, like a nonfiction subject, I think this will be one of the few that I do. Because I would like to move on to more fun games.
Yeah.
but still... like firmly rooted in like a meaningful experience.
Yeah.
I think that if you don't share the way that you see the world, then you're not going to have much to say.
Yeah, Josh, I've heard you use that term, meaningful games, in a couple different places.
Yeah. I guess I blogged about it a little bit a couple years ago. And then I've organized a couple game jams dedicated to it. And that's actually one of the like couple places where Ryan and I first interacted. So that's kind of how we got to know each other a little bit more, was participating in that. And yeah, that's just, I guess that's something I'm really passionate about, is people infusing a video game or video games with their own worldview, and how that gives you something to say, to put it in Ryan's words. So I think that's a really important thing that people aren't very intentional with a lot of times. Game designers don't often think about what their worldview is and how to express that in a video game. So I think that's something I really want to see more of in the medium.
That's what's kind of maybe one of the missing components of meaning in the mechanics. Is that a lot of time just game designers see it from a very like engineering perspective, that all the meaning that can be surmised is in the mechanic, right? Like all meaning is in the form. And so, you know, I personally believe that there is meaning in the form, but that meaning in the spirit, the personhood, the what makes you you, the you know, is what infuses it with something more, you know. And so I think it's kind of a both and. Like, you have meaning in the mechanic, and you also want to infuse your spirit into it, if that makes sense.
This is kind of an off-the-wall question, but, you know, you're operating in very similar spaces, so it makes sense to ask. Have you played Cart Life at all?
I haven't played it yet.
I haven't either.
Yeah, that might be one that's kind of like worth exploring, especially because of what you said about that mixture there. But it's it kind of explores poverty in a way that is both mechanical and you know, narrative, you know, explicit narrative. In both those ways.
I did get a chance to play Papers, Please.
Yeah, that same one. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a similar vein, rather.
Yeah, and what I was so struck by playing it was how freaked out I was not to know all the rules.
Yeah.
Like, and remember all the rules, and I didn't want to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
But how easy you kind of fall into just doing what the government tells you to, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it was a very profound feeling, even though it was kind of, I mean, I guess it was serious, but it was kind of like there was a non-seriousness to it as well.
I'm super excited to see games like Cart Life, and I mean, not just because it won the IGF Seamus McNally, like that's just amazing,
yeah.
But in and of itself, but just the fact that people are making games that represent more of the human experience, and not just things that are like super intense, you know, like our games, the subject matter is a little bit more intense, but with Cart Life, it's like the fact that it's dealing with poverty. It's not necessarily like a homeless person simulator, but it's like simulator about struggling. And so that's really interesting to me, because I read this recent blog post about how there's like all these causes for the homeless, for people who are terminally ill, but there seems to be like this subset of the population that's poor or struggling that can get kind of forgotten.
Right.
So I was really excited to see a game like Cart Life, because it just highlights another aspect of who we are, and what life is like, and allows us to just gain a deeper perspective of the world and to understand humanity in a deeper way.
Right.
Yeah, I think to piggyback off of that, you know, one thing that Amy and I talk about is that we didn't really consider ourselves cancer parents, you know, like that was always them, not us, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's been like an interesting shift in all of this is that, you know, the difference between a cancer parent and a non-cancer parent is, you know, the day you find out. Like that turns you into a cancer parent. And so I think what's interesting about what you were saying there is that, you know, our demo is actually about Joel being dehydrated as a stomach bug.
Yeah.
That's what the demo is the night that he was dehydrated and I was trying to console him over the 6 hours. So the scene's called Dehydrated. And I think what's interesting is that if I didn't tell you it was cancer and it was dehydration, you know, I wonder how that would change how people receive it, you know, or mm-hmm. or when you put like just a common experience like dehydration or loneliness or mistrust or you know, missing somebody, how much the player then infuses their own experience into the game. Mm-hmm. For instance, like Jen, when she played it, Jen Frank, she said that it was ICU. Well, actually, it's just a hospital room. It's not an ICU. But there was that experience that she had that was kind of transposed into the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we focus on kind of universal things and we kind of explore those, it allows the conversation, allows the player to insert themselves into the scenario yeah. more than just to focus a homeless person simulator, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, I mean, just we're having this conversation about where this, you know, is standing out and fitting in and standing with these other, you know, these other kind of serious games. You've gotten a lot of, you know, acclaim. You know, you recently won a pretty serious honor here, you know, just from going around and showing it at these various shows. But it kind of seems like those are weird venues to kind of show something that is as personal and, you know, kind of as, you know, I know somber probably isn't the right word, but it's the best one that'll stand in right here. But I can't imagine showing that thing that I just, you know, played right there, you know, like at E3 or on a show floor or something like that. Like what's your experience been in showing this at these, you know, kind of, you know, these different, very public, very, you know, noisy wow. areas. Yeah.
Surprisingly personal.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's some people break down. Some people give us really big hugs. Some people just sit there for a few minutes. Some people quit because they can't handle it. And some people just don't even go there. You can kind of see like where they're at and where their wall's at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, for the most part, it's been very positive, but you can tell a few people that you're like, I actually didn't have permission to do that to you.
Right.
And so, so I feel bad about that, you know, because in a different context, they might have been more willing. But it is amazing to me to see able to... I mean, maybe that's just the power of video games, right? Because it kind of consumes all your senses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can like passively look at a TV screen while dinner. You know, you can't... while you're playing a game.
Yeah.
So maybe just even though it's allowed, like people are still able to be immersed because they have the big headphones on and it's all of their concentration. But
yeah,
I don't know.
When you're watching something, you can fiddle with something with your hands. I'm playing with a multi-tool right now. you know, but yeah. Like just like there's something about that tactile experience and deciding, for instance, to pray, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in a particularly poignant moment of that. Yeah, I could see how that would be, you know. Has there been, you know, an especially memorable or impactful response that you've gotten, or is that too personal to the, you know, to the people that you've, that, you know, that have experienced this with you?
Yeah, I do feel uncomfortable talking about it specifically.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's an intimate, private conversation, you mm-hmm. know, so mm-hmm. with a stranger.
Right.
And I think that's the neatest thing that we want to do is create like a permissive space where people can talk about it. Like
mm-hmm.
one of the things I'd still love to do is have that gallery space where people can play the game or play scenes from the game or even if we added certain living paintings along with it,
mm-hmm.
would allow people to have that space to talk about those things. Like, just to talk about, I mean, it's funny, as soon as I tell somebody my personal story, they tell me theirs. So, so just creating that space for people to do that, I think is very, very helpful. You just don't feel so alone, you know?
Yeah. And it's wonderful to be the, to, you know, it's a conversation a lot of people are unwilling to have. I mean, yeah.
Well, how do you bring it up, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, my kid has cancer.
Yeah.
Then what?
Just thinking about, you know, just like as a video game, I mean, what do you do in video games? You hop on turtles and you shoot aliens. You know, it feels unique in that space, but it's unique in general, just in life experience, unless you're out there seeking that conversation out. And, you know, it's a really brave step for you guys to go out there and, again, for lack of a better word, kind of aggressively start it.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
I have one experience that I've talked about before. I was having a really bad day, and I went to Best Buy to get my camera fixed. And so I'm there at the Geek Squad table, and I'm
trying to show them
how it's like broken, and then it just works. So mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, great. Now what? And then a friend that happened to work there came up and asked me about Joel, and I said, well, I'm feeling really down, and you know he's doing all right, but there's this, this, and this. And the guy behind the counter says, well, I had brain cancer when I was a teenager. We prayed, and it changed form, and so here I am. And I was just like I would never know that the Geek Squad member had cancer.
Wisdom from the Geek Squad, literally a first in the universe.
So that actually changed my day. It was amazing. Just because somebody was willing to ask me in public about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of the, like, the way that we are trying to design this is to create a space that allows a meaningful or intimate conversation to happen after play. And that's kind of how you win the game, you know, is to have this deep conversation. So that's definitely what we're going for. And it's really exciting, even though these conferences are totally not the ideal place. It can still work and people can still have those conversations. And so we feel like we've succeeded when that happens.
Yeah.
People are pretty shocked that they're able to. I mean, I was even listening to somebody today that had said that there's like people shouting and there's screens and there's lights and there's all this stuff. And yet it still managed to affect them.
Yeah.
So that's something else that, you know, originally, to be a communal experience, but then we're realizing it's a very personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just trying to figure out how that works, you know? Because yeah. I would hate for somebody to play like a really sad part and totally be alone. I mean, I guess unless they really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly they're allowed to, you know, but...
Yeah. So in that instance, you know, how do you feel about the eventual possibility of kind of releasing this on Steam Greenlight or distributing it through your own site and, you know, putting it in front of people who most likely will be playing it alone, who won't be playing it in that kind of supportive environment?
That's definitely something we're thinking about a lot. But I will not say anything more
right.
on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me, just to speak specifically to the idea of somebody playing alone, it does make me pretty uncomfortable because up to this point, we've been able to, I mean, I guess there's maybe some people like, you know, jurors that have played the game for some of these festivals and stuff that have probably played it alone. But a lot of the times, you know, like tonight, for example, perfect example,
yeah.
There's five of us together meeting and you guys played it and we can talk about it afterward. And I think that's really valuable. And so it does kind of scare me to think of thousands of people who could be playing this alone. But I think we definitely are willing to step up to the responsibility of making sure that that the game is ultimately about hope. You know, right. Obviously, this part of the demo is pretty intense. But even, you know, if you can manage to get all the way through, it still ends on a hopeful note with some peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely our intention to continue some of that peace and tenderness you know, like, it's pretty hard to stay down when you hear the infectious laugh of a child.
God, that laugh.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, really, if Xbox had just maintained their always-on piece, they could have fixed that problem for you, made sure people didn't play it alone. But yeah. Thanks for nothing, Microsoft.
Wait a minute, weren't we just yelling at them for that last week?
Yeah, but this is the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fist, we reserve the right to change our opinions and then
yeah. I want to piggyback off of a couple things that you said. You know, obviously the story of your interaction with cancer here is intensely personal. But there's also your interaction with faith, which is almost equally as personal. And I'd be curious to hear more about kind of your journey and how people have experienced that, the reactions you've got to that, and kind of what you're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, you don't see faith brought up in a lot of games like this right here, so I'm curious about that too.
I kind of see it as when you choose to make a game or make art, you're kind of putting yourself on a soapbox. And so when you think of people talking about faith on a soapbox, it's usually like they're telling you about God from like an impersonal space, you know. They're just like, well, God is this or God is this, or you know, beware or be warned, or you know, doom is coming, or whatever it is. And so for me, I personally want to, if I'm on a soapbox, I'm going to tell you about my story, and I'm going to tell you about where I found hope in despair, you know. And the reason I end with a prayer in the scene is because that's how it happened, you know. And so for me, like, that was 6 hours compressed into 10 minutes. And I had called my wife and I was at the end of my rope, and Joel wouldn't calm down, and he couldn't keep anything down. And I was just at the end of myself, and I was laying on the couch in the hospital bed, a very uncomfortable couch, and just crying out to God. And just those prayers, those moments are something that everybody can relate to. So I just think there's a difference. I think when you tell people a story from a soapbox, it's a whole lot different than if you yell at people through a megaphone. So that's just how I approach faith. It's something that's really integral to my life, and it informs all my decisions, and it's how I get through the tough times. And I just want people to meet the Jesus that I know. So rather than the one that everybody's kind of talking about. So so that's how I approach it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for what you're doing. It's It was an incredible experience to be able to play that tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Impactful is a word I can think to describe that.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Yeah. So just kind of, you know, looking towards the future here, you know, with E3 very closely behind us and you guys being involved in that, you know, where are you going to be next with this thing? Like, if somebody were to drive out and get a pass or whatever, like what's next for showing this thing to the world?
Rezzed just got over.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like there were people who really enjoyed it there. But the next upcoming thing is Develop, also in the UK. So we are one of the 10 games in the Indie Showcase, which is an awesome honor.
Great.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's really exciting and kind of humbling because we're just a couple guys making this thing. So,
yeah.
That's the next thing. I think it's July, 10th and 11th or something?
That's 9th through the 11th.
Cool.
And then Artscape out in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
Is the 19th through the 21st of July.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are basically the two that we can share right now. So.
Right.
Yeah. And I might be bringing the whole family out because my kids are way into like history and stuff. So
oh, cool.
Washington, nice. D.C. is on our list. So
Oh, that'd be a great opportunity.
We will bring everybody out, so we'll see.
Yeah. And, you know, if somebody was really interested in this project and wanted to, you know, help support either, you know, either the game, you guys, or Joel, you know, what's the best way to do that?
You can check out our website, thatdragoncancer.com, and we have the book available that we made. And I actually illustrated the book so that I could learn Blender better, so that I could contribute art to the game. So what you're seeing is my first 5 months of Blender work.
Oh, dude, I spent 5 months messing around with Blender in college. I spent way more than 5 months messing around with Blender in college, and I never made anything that looked that good. So major kudos.
Thanks, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if people want to support us that way, that's great. It's, the ebook is kind of pay what you want. So mm-hmm. people want to give us a ton of money, they are more than welcome to that way. But otherwise, you know, we're just we're living off of our savings and we're looking for funding, and I think we might have a beat on it. So we're doing good right now. But yeah, just telling people about it and just engaging with us, participating is the best thing.
Yeah, it's a big conversation.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope that we get to do a lot more of those.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys very much for coming on the show. You know, we really appreciate getting the look at the game, you know, having you answer our questions. And I'll speak for both Dennis and Ben. We're really excited about whatever comes out next from this.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, this is Cole recording a couple days later because of personal stuff. So we would really like to thank Josh and Ryan for coming on to the show and kind of talking about some really personal stuff with us, talking about their game. Check it out on their website. Follow it in the news. It is really, really cool and really important. I'll keep the admin stuff pretty short, but if you want to see more of the show, go to duckfeed.tv/thelevel, where you can find other episodes of the show. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Subscribe on iTunes, ratings, reviews, all of that's really important. Check out the other shows on the network, blah, blah, blah. If you would like to support the network monetarily, go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use our Amazon link. And that helps cover things like hosting. You've heard all this before. It's a little crass, but oh well. And yeah, since nobody else is here to do their outros and Twitter, this has been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter. We were also joined by Ben Merkel, who is at Merkelizer on Twitter, and Dennis Furia, who is D Furia on Twitter. And then our guests were Ryan Green, who is at RyanGreen8 on Twitter, and Josh Larson, who is at GoDatPlay. That's GoDatPlay on Twitter as well. So thank you so much for listening, and try not to be too bummed out, because this is a thing about hope.
Did you like the fact that he used the term grind on as well?
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't immediately think to comment on it. I'm glad that I didn't. Just like, ah, that's a segment that we do. It's called The Grind. You see, it's funny because